We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Bucks won a f***ing NBA championship.
Yeah!
What? What?
He tries to take a pulse, babe.
Watching that basketball game, like, caused health problems for me.
Boogie hates racism and Chris Paul. And who cannot get on board with that platform?
If I've learned a lot, this, I'm not going to say it. That sounds too
bad.
No.
The Bucks do win it all. Pat Connaughton's numbers should be in the rafters.
Hey there. Welcome to the Eurostep Podcast Network Game 5 post-game pod. The Milwaukee Bucks absolutely rope-a-dope the Boston Celtics. If you're not a boxing or pugilism enthusiast, looks like they were down and out. They, in fact, were not down and out on the back of two incredible Drew Holiday defensive plays and a lot of other plays that we will talk about. The Bucks secure a 110-107 win in Boston, moving to 2-1 in Boston on the series and returning to Milwaukee for a pivotal Game 6 potential closeout game. I'm Ty Windisch, joined as always by my youthful co-host, Rohan Kadi, and my also youthful co-host, Adam McGee, of the Win in 6 podcast. Fellas, how's it going?
It's great to be back. I hate missing podcasts. Feeling much better. Happy to be here. Wow.
I don't feel so youthful after that game. I think it aged me about 20 years. But all's well that ends well.
It's poetic and true. I think we always start with Giannis. We'll get to Giannis. A hell of a Giannis game. We've got to give Drew Holiday the credit up front. You know, still not the most beautiful shot-making game from Drew. I think we've come to expect that. He figured it out on the threes at least. He hit a few yes shots that were absolutely crucial. Throw all of that aside. We'll talk about it, but throw it aside for now. Two, a block and a steal in the last 10 seconds, both on Marcus Smart, wonderfully enough, a little bit of payback for the end of game four. That absolutely sealed it. I mean, the Bucks were doing the make free throws, get the ball, hold the lead thing. Celtics would have had a shot to get right back in the game. Drew said, they're not even going to take a shot, man. They're not even going to take a shot. Just the kind of wow defensive playmaking we saw last finals was back on display in Boston. And it was so sweet.
It's fitting because we did a playback, so we were live for this game. Make sure you check out our playbacks, by the way. They're a ton of fun. And throughout a lot of the game, we were just bagging on Drew Holiday for his offense. Like, let's be honest, like, that's what we were doing because it just felt like, what on earth are you doing, my guy? Even late possessions down, like, I forget which exact possession this was. We're recording right after the game, by the way. There was like a late possession where it's like, okay, the Bucks have some momentum. They're getting it going. And Drew just takes like a wild, like, step back mid-ranger that just like hits side rim. And you're like, what?
It was when the Bucks were first cutting into the Celtics lead in the fourth quarter. Drew took and missed a shot in the lane. And I commented, like, you know, who hadn't been taking shots when the Bucks were finding a rhythm on offense? Drew Holiday. And then he took a couple later that mattered. But Rohan, back to your overall point here.
Yeah, so we were just bagging on his offense, and which is fair. He hasn't been, like, at all very much effective on offense, and I feel like it's fair to criticize him for that. But we also, I feel like we're losing perspective on a lot of his defense. And those last two plays by him are just extremely emblematic of what he means to this team and the importance he has and why he's allowed to take those shots. One, again, no Chris Middleton in the series. Someone has to take shots. He's one guy who can create for himself pretty easily on this team. And that's something that's difficult to come by, as everyone is learning as you're watching the Milwaukee Bucks try and get some points on the board. Jrue Holiday is one guy who can actually create his own shot consistently. So he's allowed to go take those shots. I mean, I guess go off, but just masterclass on defense. They flashed up a graphic on the TNT broadcast. It's just the only broadcast. Like, there's no local anymore. I don't know what I'm talking about. Where it's like players are shooting 33% when being defended by Jrue Holiday during this postseason, which is the lowest mark of any player. He's insane. He's ridiculous. I'm running out of words to describe how beautiful a defensive game that Jrue Holiday puts on a consistent game-to-game basis. It's just, it's magical to watch.
This was truly iconic. You know, the moment that, I mean, you've got to do some other stuff for it to rank higher up the rankings. We know when he came up with a very big steal that we'll all certainly remember forever. But the moment that, if we're going to go kind of like for like in series, okay, this wasn't the closeout game. But we could look back on it as, you know, maybe this proves to be akin to a win or go home game in the series. It's like Brooks' block on KD against the Nets in terms of a defensive play that is just like, it really set the tone for everything. Not that much of a tone had to be set when you come up with plays that big in the final 10 seconds of the game. But We've seen him just be consistently excellent defensively all throughout his time with the Bucks, all throughout the regular season. We've seen him just snatch the ball away for people for fun countless times. You know, you can expect it at least once a game. But in the final 10 seconds of a game, with the stakes as high as they are, which I don't know if, like, even a week from now and kind of recounting this, if everyone will fully just get themselves back to the place of, I think, where we all felt like the game was not going well. The Bucks did brilliantly to be there, and that really felt like a big deal in its own right. But to then come up with those plays at that time, secure a win, truly incredible.
It was so Bucks. This is what they do. We said it in the last pod. I don't know if we believed it, but this is what they do. They're a rope-a-dope team. It's their whole identity. They get so down bad, and then they're just like, actually, we're still going to win. Sorry, we forgot to inform you. We're still going to capture this dub here. Drew still shot 37.5% from the game, or for the game, but he was 4-for-7 from deep, some huge ones, 8 boards, 8 assists, just 2 turnovers. That is a huge deal. It felt like he had more than that early. He had no turnovers after the first quarter, I think that means. So really, really big stuff from Drew. I don't want to push Giannis off too long, but we talked and talked and talked about how good role players had to be for the Bucks in this game. And it wasn't always the prettiest, but a few of them were good enough. And I think Pat Connaughton, we'll talk about Pat again, just another, the crazy thing about Pat, it's just everything, whatever you need. That's what Pat provides. It can be different play to play, game to game, but the shooting, the defense, the rebounding, the physicality, he's always there. He's always in the right spot, made some huge plays. Wes Matthews, I think, again, we've talked about the defense. Dekhayis Duncan wrote a great article, hung out with us on our playback, which was great. But he highlighted Wes. You know, he misses 6 shots. He missed all 3 of his 2s, which is kind of rough, but 3-for-6 from deep. Like, a guy who at times could not hit a shot, knocked down just enough 3s. But I want to talk about Bobby Portis, who I think you could look at the box score and go, oh, terrible game from Bobby Portis. The shooting wasn't good. He shouted out Milwaukee with a 4-for-14 slash line. He was everything in the fourth quarter. The defense, he hung in there. The rebounding was massive. He had 7 offensive boards, 15 total rebounds, led the Bucks, and I believe the game in rebounding. Correct?
Shout out rebounds.
What?
Said rebounds.
Oh, sorry. 15 boards. 15.
Under the circumstances, I understand completely.
Yeah, but it's somebody else. Clearly, I'm losing it here. Somebody else talking about Bobby.
But, like, it's just completely. He had the go-ahead basket, and I felt like that's the story of the game for Bobby Portis. He made plays when it mattered. Again, like you said, if you just look at the box score, it's like, oh, this is kind of not a best Bobby Portis game. And that's partially true. It wasn't the best Bobby Portis game you could ask for. He had a lot of missed shots, a lot of missed opportunities. So it's like, maybe if you hit some of these, you're not in this situation, but that's a weird butterfly effect thing. But in the moment in which you needed him, Giannis misses a free throw. Bobby Portis goes and fights for rebounding position, tip after tip. He kept it alive and manages to put it in after there was a sequence about a minute beforehand where he just missed a wide open dunk. To be able to come back and just do that, special, absolutely special play.
I didn't get to call it out at the time, but I was definitely thinking the missed dunk. It was just wide open. It's just inexplicable. It's one of those plays that you'll remember forever if they end up losing a really tight game and immediately kind of forget if they win. And that's totally what's going to happen. I mean, if the Bucks end up losing, that thing is everywhere. That's a meme, everything else. Now it's just like, oh, whatever. Didn't end up mattering somehow.
And when we were talking about it on the playback, I remember us calling out, I think it was Brooke specifically, he was on the floor at the time. We were like, they need to just get in position and start fighting for some offensive boards. Like the offensive boards are there for them against the Celtics. Wasn't happening at all. Brooke immediately started to do that. I think he finished with, it was only two, but he was there fighting for them much more actively from that time. Bobby really took that up a gear. Like seven offensive boards is a big deal. And yeah, it was not a good game overall from Bobby. There's times where you're like, he's not surviving out there. Particularly, we'll probably get into it if we talk about some of the things that we'll like to see less of or need to be managed more carefully going into game six. But him and Grayson out there together is tough. Like you're making life much more difficult for both of those guys. When you're asking a lot of them to just, you know, hang tough and do what you need them to do to survive those minutes. But we've talked a lot over the last 12 months about just Bobby, lock in and do the things you're good at, which is make your presence felt, use your foot speed, and just give everything not to be found out defensively. Like so much of it with him is down to not effort, because effort is always a given with Bobby, but just focus and decision making in those moments. And final few minutes of the game, he basically nailed it. And you can't ask for more than that from him. Because there were some tough decisions to make in terms of, I think four of the guys who were out there were picking themselves. And if you wanted to go maybe more reliable defense, you're going to Brooke. But you needed the offense. And ultimately, you needed Bobby's energy on the glass. Like that's what gets you through. So the fact that he survived defensively and was able to do that just is a massive deal. Because Pat, like obviously, Giannis and Drew were going to be out there, but guys like Pat and Wes were no-brainers. So it's like, okay, who else can go out there and help you to turn this game around? And Bobby did exactly what they needed from.
I think it's huge for the Bucks that they're able to size down. Brook only plays 20 minutes in this game and only gets three boards himself. We know he's helpful when he's not rebounding for him too, but they're able to size down for more than half the game and still out-rebound the Celtics on the offensive glass by a huge margin. Milwaukee had 17 offensive rebounds. The Celtics had five as a team. So Bobby had more than all of Boston. The rest of it was really a team effort. Brooke had two. Giannis had two. Wes had three. He was active there. Grayson, Drew, and Pat all had one. It's just like those are the – we've seen that swing games for the Bucks before, but the fact that they can now – it seems like – actually play small without giving up that advantage against the Celtics team, at least as long as Robert Williams is out or not playing. And I think even if he does play game six, which we're not sure, you know, Brooke probably plays a little more if Robert Williams is out there more. I think matching those two minutes makes a lot of sense for the Bucks. Really makes it a lot more comfy for Brooke defensively. But I think it's a really good sign, because that's one of the things we haven't always seen. And there were some bad possessions where the Bucks did let Al Horford or someone through for the offensive putback. But you know, overall, rebounding without Brooke out there has not always been there, and definitely have to credit Bobby and guys like Wes and Giannis for stepping up there and grabbing some of these loose boards.
Seven boards from Wes is a big deal. Like, he can do that, but it's not something you're going to see every night. So
he was
when
all
you consider the energy
especially
expanding late defensively generally to then go and get the boards too, that's super impressive.
No, just his ability to go fight for rebounds late in that game kept them alive. Like,
yeah.
How many offensive rebounds did he end with?
Three.
Three? I feel like two of them were within the final 5 minutes.
I think they were. I should be able to pull a quarter stat soon. But yeah, I think I think West third on the team in minutes. He logged 36 minutes. I think maybe he'll be fourth to Pat.
This dude was on his couch to start the season.
It's probably good. A little extra rest. It probably did him well.
Look what it did Al Horford.
Yeah. He only got one in the fourth quarter. Bobby Portis, four offensive boards in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
All four of his rebounds, actually. His only made field goal was the tip-in. He missed his other three.
Completely emblematic.
But made all four of his free throws, which some big free throws in the fourth quarter. Bucks are
from
seven
guys that we don't usually see, and that like him and Pat, it's not like we're watching a lot of fourth quarter games where games on the line and they're going to the free throw line. Like, Pat's a great free throw shooter. Still, that's not a situation I've ever seen Pat Connaughton in before. And to just make nothing of it is really impressive.
I was really a little concerned because I was as that play was happening, I didn't say this aloud, but I was thinking, when's the last time Pat took a free throw?
you don't see it all.
Those were his only two in the game.
It might be his only two in the postseason. Like, that's probably not the case, but it sure feels like.
Oh, you got it. Yeah, it's so Pat though, and I think I wasn't mad when I saw it was him. I was worried about three of the five Bucks. I don't know who I wanted to shoot, to be honest with you. I mean, Giannis inbounding, I was like, Drew ran to the other side of the floor. I was like, that's probably good. Let's not make that pass. I don't want to see. As great in clutch as he was, free throws have not always been a Drew Holiday strength. He was 2-for-2 in this game, to give him some credit. But I was like, Pat, okay, that's not bad. Brian Anderson read, he's like an 85 or whatever percent shooter. But I was like, man, he does not shoot a lot. But if there's anyone on the team who could walk up totally cold and just nail two huge free throws, it's Pat nails Connaughton.
Pat Connaughton has taken before today.
Yeah.
Three free throws the entire postseason.
We know if that's before today. Because I was looking at two and I was trying to figure out, are you on NBA? That's
on NBA.com.
Yeah, so am I. Let me go on, keep going.
He took three in game three against the Bulls.
Okay.
So he hasn't shot a free throw until tonight in what, like two and a half weeks?
Since April 22nd.
And it makes sense too that like if he's shooting free throws, it's off a
it's three of them. Pointer. Yeah,
you and know, before yeah. that, he hadn't shot free throws since April 8th.
before
those two free throws, he had five total free throws since April 3rd.
Hey, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. That's ridiculous. Wild. That's a great stat, Rohan. Should we do bad news first or Giannis first?
Oh, let's do nothing bad news.
Okay. I just don't know if at some point we'll have to. Let's do Giannis. Let's do okay game from Giannis. You know, the casual 40 burger on 59% shooting, 40% from deep, 60% from free throw, which we'll take. 11 boards, 3 assists, 1 steal, 1 block, 7 turnovers. So, I want to look at some of what are called his turnovers because I did think he had 4 at one point when Drew had 2. Did not feel like Giannis was turning the ball over more than Drew, but whatever. He ends up with 4 personal fouls. I think all came in the fourth quarter, but did not pick up any more. And we were talking about it all game, right? The scoring is there now. He's figured it out. He doesn't look like he's going up against that much. I mean, he's working for it, but the first couple of games of the series, seemed like it was so tough for him to finish. That's not happening anymore. Like, I think part of it is Grant Williams and Al Horford are playing less together. Robert Williams is obviously not playing at all. But when he's getting, you know, Horford or mostly Horford this game in space, it just does not look that difficult for him. There's a couple times Horford wins, but Giannis is winning a lot of those possessions now.
It's just easy. Like you said, it just looks effortless. A lot of it comes down to the angles. I kept saying this during the playback. Angles are so important for Giannis, especially against guys like Grant Williams, like Al Horford, mostly Al Horford. Al Horford looked like he was out on an island against Giannis today, which is just incredible considering what we saw the first couple of games of the series. Like, a lot of the time we just saw Giannis, classic Giannis, attacking from the top of the key, just going 1-on-5. Now we just see slight variations. We see Giannis attacking from the wing. We see Giannis setting up near the baseline. And then he just uses his skill, his athleticism, to just go and finish. That's all it takes. It's the little adjustments that matter because Giannis, like everyone knows that Giannis is obviously the better player and he should win most of these matchups because like he's the best player in the world. He should be doing that. It just takes a little bit of time to figure out how exactly you need to dominate these matchups. Then he goes out there and he dominates them. Early on, we saw him dominate the Jaylen Brown matchup just purely because he's just a lot bigger than him and just can elevate right over the top of him. But again, when you get guys like Grant Williams, guys like Al Horford, who are big, strong, move their feet, you know, might take you a couple games. And then you're like, okay, this is how I dominate. It's not a matter of, oh, these guys can limit Giannis. It's how long can these guys be affecting Giannis? Because it's not going to last. It's not going to last forever at all. No defender is capable of containing Giannis for more than three games at a time, maybe more than two games at a time. He's going to figure it out. And once he does, it's over. Just kiss your family goodbye because you're about to be put in the basket.
The best thing is it doesn't feel that noteworthy, like basket to basket when he's scoring now. You know, I know he's been putting up pretty good numbers throughout the series, but it feels more so even than any other point. You just look at the box score and you're like, oh, he's got 20 right now. Okay, I didn't realize that, but I'm not going to doubt it. You know, it's very, very simple for him in spite of how hard he's being made to work for it. And, you know, he did have those comments about, you know, how much he loves physicality. I think we poked some fun at them at the time. But, hey, they made him bleed, and the Bucks just went and said, okay, we're going to have to take this game now.
In fairness to Boston, I wasn't.
Listen, Pat was forced into it, you know? It was the heat of battle forced Pat into that spot. Fair. But, yeah,
Pat
maybe.
Knew he could motivate
Giannis. Does Giannis know that Pat was the one who made him bleed? Probably not. He probably thinks it was a Celtic.
Here's my galaxy brain take. Pat knows how much getting hit in the face invigorates him, so he was like, I got to get Giannis going.
I will
going.
Say, to that I gotta end, get him going. To the end of it being strategic, the Bucks got 2 30-second timeouts to stop the bleeding that really helped with maybe Giannis should bleed more. Hot take.
They helped Giannis, and they also, because something we'd been talking about is Bud was burning those timeouts a little too soon, you know, and it was a concern that they weren't going to have them later in the game. And that was certainly a break. So good work, Pat, on many, many fronts.
I've got a great stat that I just saw on the timeline from Justin Russo at Fly By Night, KNITE on Twitter. Boston Celtics were 141-1 all time in the playoffs when holding a 9-plus lead entering the fourth quarter before tonight. The one was not in Boston. It was at Disney World. They had never lost in the fourth quarter when they came in with a 9-plus point lead until tonight.
Wow.
It's just beautiful.
That's Giannis. That's the moral.
How'd you like that, Bill Russell?
God, why are we disrespecting Bill Russell?
I was looking for like who do I want to go with as Mr. Adam. Celtic.
I thought you'd go for Lucky. People.
Yeah.
Lucky's not deserving.
You yell at me.
I don't respect Lucky enough to be like.
You yell at me for saying some stuff about Bob Pettit, but now
I'm not disrespecting. I'm not disrespecting Russell.
Bill Russell.
I think Russell is the ultimate Celtic. So I'm saying, like, how'd you like them apples?
That's I like that you put it to him in a Boston way too. That's really
is that a Boston thing?
Well, I forgot you don't watch movies. It's a very famous line from a movie that's very, very Boston.
Which
Good Will Hunting.
Oh, yeah, I've never seen it.
I got a number. I won't try to do a Boston accent.
Save that for a while. Yeah.
If we ever launch a Patreon, maybe a that'll long be while. That'll be on there. If we ever do, nobody would subscribe. Now.
I don't think we'll have demand for the Patreon.
What's on there? Ty Windish Boston accent? No, I'm going to pass, actually.
That's our exclusive content.
I think I'm kind of getting to the Javon Carter should play over George Hill at space.
Here's the thing. A little bit. I don't care.
It doesn't matter.
It matters a little.
I don't think it does.
Why?
Well, I mean, it's what things matter. I don't want to. I'm not
no,
saying this.
No, explain yourself. That's oh.
George was just kind of getting some light ranch cardio out there. 12 minutes. He cannot guard Tatum. The Bucks kind of think he can.
Not guard Brown
much.
Either.
He can't guard Tatum or Brown. And the whole reason that I was on Hill over Carter was, oh, I don't think Javon can hang with those guys. George can't either, unfortunately. Didn't take a shot. 2 rebounds, 2 fouls, minus 15 in 12 minutes. You know, I think maybe – I'm not saying he can't play at all for sure. I think I'd rather just try Javon and see what he's got. I mean, he's been a great 3-point shooter as a Buck. I think that's honestly the biggest reason. And also, in his minutes, like pressure the hell out of whoever's handling the ball for Boston. Like, you know, he's not going to play much. If Javon plays, it'll probably be somewhere in that neighborhood of 12 minutes that George played. He can spend that whole 12 minutes picking up guys from 90 feet, and maybe you get a turnover. You probably degrade their offensive efficiency a little bit by doing that. He knocks down a three or two. That's how he gets such a crazy plus minus. And I'm not basing this off of racking up an awesome plus minus in game one against the Celtics and the Bulls series. I just think he'd probably be more helpful. I know a lot of people on Twitter are going to drag me. I was very much
everyone is on that page. I just think it's
for flipping now.
I know you've changed your tune. My one counter is he can't defend Tatum and Brown. Probably not.
I agree.
But why? What's the reason for that?
He's too small.
Yeah, and Javon's smaller.
Oh, so, I thought you were talking about Javon. I don't think Hill's too small. I just think he's not.
Well, he is. He is for Jason Tatum. Like, that's been proven. Tatum can get what he wants, and the same happened with Jaylen Brown.
They say he's 6'10". I don't believe it.
They also say he's like 16 years old.
But Ty, on that, the thing that we talked about on playback is I'm not opposed to him getting some of Grayson's minutes if Grayson's shots aren't falling.
Yeah, I think we can talk there too.
That's where I see the value. That's where I see the logic in it, because with Grayson, if his shots aren't falling, we know he's a weak point defensively. So if Javon's out there, if the only thing they're going to have as an advantage over him is his height, I'll take the chances with that, because we know his defensive instincts are great and he has been shooting very well. Like, that's the spot I would look for. But I know why everyone's focusing on George Hill. I know. George Hill is not the answer, and he's just back from injury, and he's also incredibly injured.
Yeah.
But
dude still walking?
He may not be if he keeps going like this.
Pure desire to get that ring, man. That's how.
He's one of the playable guys because of his body type, because of his size. He's still wrong for your two most important matchups. You should just maybe try and get him on Marcus Smart a bit more when he's out there. Or if Peyton Pritchard is out there, you're like, okay, get George Hill on the floor.
But see, that's where I just like, if neither one of them can guard the Jays, and you let's assume you probably get more offense from Javon, maybe. I don't know. It's close. They're not really using Hill to do much of the on-ball stuff anymore. He's kind of just out there. That's why I'm like, give Javon a shot. Like, let's see at least. I mean, he's played well when he's played. I don't know.
Do you think they should try, like, if Hill's going to play, particularly because, like, for as great as this game ends for Drew had his problems, again, offensively, with just, like, basic playmaking, just with setting up the books to get things in motion offensively. And we have talked about it's not something they've real strength in terms of that kind of guard. It feels like if you're going to play George, you should probably give him a chance to do some of that and see how that goes and spells.
100% agree. That's exactly how I would say it too. If you're going to play him, he should probably be doing that. Because I think that's my prior reasoning to George over Javon was on-ball playmaking and defense. The defense, I just don't see the advantage. I think Javon at this point, again, where Hill's at, age-wise, health-wise, everything else, I think Javon is the better option, even if he's smaller. I just think he's going to hold up better. The ball pressure's there. And George is just not giving you, as much as the Bucks had hoped, which, again, it's going through a ton. It's not to, crap on George Hill here. But I think if Hill does play, then, I think that's what you should do, because we've liked what we've seen there. He's such a steady, calm, good creator, gets guys involved. But if you're just looking at that spot as, like, off-ball guy who's going to go up and down the court and play some defense, and you're not planning to put the ball in that player's hands, then I'm definitely like, let's try. I'm not even saying you should play over him. Let's at least give Javon a 4-minute run and see what happens. Whether that's, Grayson playing 4 minutes less or Hill playing 4 minutes less, because we know the defensive upside is there. We know the offensive upside is there too. Let's give him a shot to see if it holds.
Plus, we can push the Eurostep brand if he does
really. I know. I've been waiting, dude. I've been waiting. Oh, the Bud is not considerate of our download numbers at all. It's very inconsiderate of him.
Well, when they find a win, not that we're going to put the win on Bud, that helps our download numbers.
That's so true. That's a good point.
The longer they can stay in the playoffs,
from
the
last
better.
Win. I'm stealing this from Mike over at the timeline. he said, I think on the last I think, yeah, the Game 5 pod or whatever for the Suns Mavs. He said, welcome back to everyone who only tunes in for wins. So welcome back to everyone who tunes in for wins.
It's actually kind of less true. A lot of people persevered with the Game 4 pod.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to everyone who tunes in ever. If you turned in now and you're not already, please subscribe on YouTube and your podcast platform of choice. I usually do that in the intro. Got kind of caught up in a couple things that were going on.
We appreciate every single listener is what we're saying.
We do. We do. Win or lose or whenever you tune in. If you listen to once in a while, that's fine. You know, consider upping it, maybe. But if you don't have time, we get it. Rohan, what do you think of Grayson Allen tonight?
Oh, boy. Why are you putting this on me, man? I'm usually the happy one.
For that yikes. Reaction, that's why.
Yikes.
Grayson had 5 assists.
He did have 5 assists. That part was good. He was doing a good job playmaking, but my God, was he getting hunted.
He ended with a positive plus minus, which is bewildering.
Somehow. But wow. They're really making, the Celtics, that is, are really making an effort of going at him every single time they can. Jaylen Brown in that third quarter, that just felt mean. It felt like a bully at the playground. Like, please stop. You're hurting his feelings, sort of thing. Like, wow. Like, to be fair, a lot of the stuff that Jaylen was hitting, those are tough shots. But also, like, Adam, you mentioned this on the playback. Grayson is just, he's a little small. Like, Jaylen Brown could just elevate over him. Yeah, it's just tough. It's not even just Jaylen Brown. They're just attacking him and trying to put him in every single action that they can. And it's asking a lot from Grayson. Like, this is a very, very smart, fundamental team in the Boston Celtics. Well-coached. Well, they have great game plans. You can't be throwing out guys who are minus defenders out there.
Not late in the game. I mean, you can try him. They got a 3 from him early. I don't think he should play no minutes away.
I think that's a good call because early is good. Early is good. Just later on, it's so much tougher.
I hate to say it. It's Bryn Forbesian.
It's Bryn Forbes is worse.
I know. I don't disagree, but I think the principle is there.
That's fair.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top 3 things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think the thing it brings me back to, which is, they're one game away. Win the next one, and everything is great, but I would still like to see a lineup change for game 6, and I'd like to see Pat come into the race.
Yes.
Because I think, to the point you just made, Ron, the play that stands out to me is very late in the game, probably about 2 minutes remaining, where Tatum gets Pat on an island, and like, it should be all bad things, but Pat is disciplined enough. As I think we talked about in the last episode, Ty, if it's not a case where he is charging from one side of the court to the other and he gets off his feet and you're left with a wide open tree, like,
which did happen,
Pat is locked
in.
It did happen in this game
once.
But if he's locked in and you're in front of him and he can just, you know, get down into defensive stance, he is tougher to beat than most guys just assume he is. With some of the underlying bias, I guess it's there, which is like, oh yeah, but this is easy against Grayson Allen. It's just going to be just as easy against Pat. And it's not, because he's bigger, he's stronger, and I do think he's considerably smarter as well.
I think,
well, take a look at the last play where Jrue Holiday got the block. Like, you can see Marcus Smart get an angle towards the rim, which is why he goes there, which is hilarious because Marcus Smart is trying to be the hero at the end when they have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Three straight times.
You see that because Marcus Smart has that angle, Pat recovers so quick and gets in front of Marcus Smart without fouling him and makes the shot a little difficult. Obviously, Drew's going to get all the credit for that play because he gets the block. And obviously, like, it's well-deserved. That's an incredible, incredible play because you're not even letting a shot get off. But Pat, my goodness, his ability to recover defensively is elite at this level.
I will say John Schumann of NBA.com did shout out Pat's defense, which I like to see. We like to see that.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he did make that play possible for Drew. I'll say the cool thing about Pat is it's a little Giannis-esque in a way. He got pretty badly burned by Tatum earlier in the fourth. Tatum crossed him and just yammed on him. And how does he respond? He holds his ground, makes Tatum shoot a jumper over him that he misses, and then makes that play later in the game to stop Smart and enable the block. And he hangs in there. He's a fighter. I think the easiest way to put it, the difference of him versus Grayson defensively, like the most simplistic way, Pat just offers more resistance. Like, you just see, I don't know how to really describe it better. Guys working against Grayson, he gets some steals some here and there.
He's
but
bigger,
like,
and stronger.
Well, he's bigger and stronger, but it's more than that. It's the way he defends. Like, Grayson was just, he's kind of just getting moved, whereas you have to move Pat. I think that's the difference. If you can't get around him.
It's not even like Grayson, like,
isn't that strength?
No, it's because fight, I think too. But there is something more to that where it feels like Grayson will show, say, Tatum the way to the rim.
He always seems he's kind of running with the guy.
Yeah, he's going to show up to one side and then he's like on his hip and he's not going to recover, which is funny because he is really athletic too, but it is not that common that you see his athleticism come out in defensive plays in the way that it seems to for Pat. And I don't mean just in terms of like when Pat blocks shots. I mean, just the ability, like, as you said, Ron, the recovery on Marcus Smart at the end of the game, like, that's even some speed that you just don't really think about, but that is what Pat brings you. But there is something to Grayson, like, when it's not going or when he's got a really tough matchup and he's being picked on, which is what was happening tonight, he gets a bit like a turnstile. Like, you know, it's easy to just turn him around and to get past him, where I think you're 100% right. Like, Pat puts up meaningful resistance. You can't just get to whatever side of Pat, get past and get behind them. Like, Pat is going to make it difficult and he's going to do everything he can to keep, whether it's Tatum, whether it's Jaylen Brown, in front of him and give himself the best chance of coming up with a really good contest.
So what do we feel about Grayson Allen going forward? Do we say just like mostly first half and break glass in case of emergency for offense?
No, I think it's a tester. I think he plays every second half. I don't know if he plays, you know, relatively normal the first three quarters. If he starts getting targeted, I think you pull him pretty fast. I don't think he plays in the fourth unless he's had a pretty strong first three quarters. From here on out, this series.
We're in closeout territory now too, so
yep.
We may just see like Wes's minutes rocket right up. I know they did to get to 37.
I don't know if that'll go much higher. I think Pat has the most.
He may go over 40. I think Pat is certainly someone who could go 40. Whether that happens if Grayson starts, though, it's probably unlikely. I would like to see Grayson like pencil him in for 20 and see how it's going.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. And if he gets to 30 like he did tonight, well, then that's a good thing. He's doing some stuff to earn it out there. But obviously, in saying that, at this point, and they're only going 8 deep as is, you're relying on other guys playing more. That's going to be down to, can you keep everyone out of foul trouble? How's Giannis holding up in terms of, is he gas late in games? He clearly was here, but an improvement. And as Ty pointed out, you know, those blood timeouts certainly helped on that front too.
New strat.
But yeah, I'd like around the 20-minute mark and let's see how it's going. Like, let's evaluate on the fly.
And I think crucially here, in those 20 to start, use him offensively. Like, get him shots in those minutes, because I think that's when he becomes more damaging to the Bucks. I think if he gets targeted a bit, if he plays 23 minutes, right, gets targeted, they get some buckets on him. If you run him five plays for to get good shots and he hits three of them, then it's like it's, you know, probably more or less a wash, right? So I think that's when the when really hurts in Grayson's minutes is when he's just kind of out there. They're not looking to him offensively. He's not touching the ball. He's not moving. And the other end is like that. That's how Boston gets going on a run. So I do think you got to play him, but you got to use him to play him. And they need to. I'm not saying, you know, if you don't use him, don't play him. They need to play him, as you laid out, Adam. There's only so many options at this point, but they just have to go to him more when he is out there.
I'd say use him like you do Pat as well. Like, I think that is something that probably comes down to the ingrained chemistry that Giannis and Pat have at this point, that a lot of those looks Pat was getting late in games, it's like it's some of the only structured offense we're seeing from the Bucks up until that point. And it just looks so easy and it looks pretty close to automatic. I know Pat's not making every shot, but it sure does feel like, and considering the importance of those shots, the gravity of the moment, like that's a big deal. And just on Pat on that front, to bring it back, to bring it way back to Ty going all in last year on rafters. Like, what is there to say at this point?
It's
like,
in the intro for a reason.
It was a Raptors game.
But he, like, that's not even something that's kind of a, like, a fun joke anymore. The way he steps up in the playoffs is so, so valuable. And going into an offseason where an actual value is going to be put on Pat, I think for the Bucks, that's something they're really going to have to think about, because you just can't find guys who can do that very easy. Grayson's a great example where you look at everything that's there on paper and all the things you'd want to get out of it, but is he someone who actually goes up a level in the playoffs? Certainly TBD at best right now. Yeah. Pat, we have no doubts about it. Pat is a better player the playoffs, and that's, if you're a team like the Bucks, you're guaranteed to be there, guaranteed to be an absolute, like, slobber knocker series. That's what you want.
What? Excuse you?
I'm using more boxing terminology.
Slobber knocker. It's, you know,
boxing. You're locking.
That can't be really a thing.
Of course, it's a thing.
I'd be careful how you Google slobber knocker. You might want to. Well, I want to save search that.
Don't add any more letters.
Oh my God, the Urban Dictionary. Oh God, I gotta close.
Oh, I don't want to know what that term is. Yeah.
Okay.
Listen, I know how I meant it. That's
the,
all.
The funny
matters.
Thing though about Pat is, I funny me of all people, a little bit of doubt late in the year. He's coming back from the injury. Didn't exactly look right. I think some of it was the injury. I think some of it. I don't know if there's a better definition of a 16 game player. Like, Pat knows what the money games are. Pat knows when the team really needs him, and that's when he's gonna be there. And, you know, it's postseason after postseason. Just awesome stuff from him. I think you said it earlier, Adam, the four is there. Like, think for this series, you know, maybe Brooke is in there in other series. But I think for this series, Wes, Giannis, Pat, and Drew. Just give a shout out to the non-superstar guys there. I mean, we have been all pod, but Wes Matthews and Pat Connaughton are guys who, you know, before these last couple of games, for sure, people around the league, probably not people like fans, you know, are like, cares about those guys, right?
Well, think for Wes
Matthews.
Go back to the last time Wes was in the playoffs with the Bucks and how that worked out. And I still don't know if we ever really got to the bottom of any of that. But the fact that we're now talking at this point, it's like, yeah, well, he's locked in.
It's
like, end the game.
It's in Penn. He's in there.
And kind of for offense too, because when the game breaks down to that kind of, it's funny, the Bucks started to get better looks, better three-point looks, certainly when they got into crunch time in the game. And when the ball not coincidentally also went into Giannis's hands a little bit more, out of Drew's hands a little bit. But in that kind of situation, Wes as a catch and shoot option is deadly. Like there's a real threat there. It doesn't have to translate actually on the box score, but you're going to create quality looks. You're going to create better spacing overall with him there, with Pat there, with what Pat's doing as well. And like that alone is enough to earn them their spots. They move
for
sure.
Constantly. This series, Pat 48% from deep, Wes 42% from deep on combined about 9 shots a game. That's role players stepping up in crunch time and throughout a series.
That's right huge. There. That's huge. You need that. You really need that if you want to win.
Do you remember on the playback when I looked at the benches and I said on the last time out, we were like, you know, they're going to beat the Celtics bench no matter what. And when we talked it on playback, it was like 22, maybe like 13 or 14. It was the second half for sure. 27, 24 books win the bench points, you know. So that's down to Pat and Bobby really coming up big.
They withstood the Daniel Tice explosion.
Oh my God, don't get me started.
Who's their leader in the Al Horford games?
5 for 4, 1 for 1 from
deep. Daniel Tice being playable, if they go, like looking through this box score, all coaching staff players involved with the Milwaukee Bucks should projectile vomit when they see Daniel Tice. What did he finish?
Five of five.
Plus 7 in 11 minutes?
The funny
you
thing.
You should be ashamed of yourself for allowing this.
The
Daniel Tice.
About that, Adam, about the Bucks bench being more productive. Celtics bench was incredible. Mm-hmm. Tice 5 for 5. Derek White 4 for 5. Peyton Pritchard 2 for 3. Like they all were, I think, very productive. Very productive for what you would expect. I mean, White's
11
really,
of 13 from the Celtics bench is pretty good. Don't think that's going to happen.
Three guys, yeah. Let's not use that terminology ever again in this.
No,
series.
But this is the thing. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, okay. I will say Derek White has turned around the series. I thought he was pretty bad early. He's been good the last couple of games. Low usage, good, but still good. But Tyson Pritchard, it's not really the case. And those guys, you know, they won all their minutes this game. They just didn't go to him much late. One thing I thought was interesting, and I saw comments after the game, and I think now we're in the part where I can get into some relatively niche stuff. Ime Udoka has a huge problem with Grant Williams and how much he talks to the officials after plays. And Keith Smith reported on this or tweeted at some point.
Wasn't
I think it was
at his
during the game.
Daughter's soccer game?
Rohan. It's a good joke. But Ime was upset, and Grant, I think notably, only played 6 of the 12 fourth quarter minutes. He didn't have a good game anyway. He was 0 for 3. He's really cooled down from earlier.
He was passing up shots as well.
Yeah, well, they're not letting him. He doesn't like the elbows or above the break, and you can see it. Like, his trigger is totally different. The Bucks just don't give him corner threes anymore, and it's kind of taken away a lot of his offense. But I do think that's a big reason for the minutes too, and I think that's a win for the Bucks, honestly. Like, even if he's not having a great shooting game, even if his offense isn't there, we saw he and Horford together pose more of a challenge to Giannis. And if Udoka is losing some trust in him, or the shot is not there, you know, the complaining about calls and giving up threes like he did, I think it was Pat Connaughton who hit one of his after that, that could be a quietly big deal heading into game 6.
Well, two things on that. One, when Horford is tasked with that alone, it's going to take away from what Horford can give you offensively. And 8 points for Horford in this game, that really hurts. You know, that's a boost that they've been getting, like a turbo boost they've been getting the last couple of games that all of a sudden is gone. So that hurts. My only other thing on that, I think with Grant Williams, and it has been very noticeable throughout the series, him getting in referees' ears. Like, if Udoka has a problem with that, Udoka does kind of set a tone himself. It's not like he has been shy about commenting on officiating or getting on the refs' cases in-game. Are just coming out with some really outlandish stuff. Like, it's been, again, very, very striking. Not exactly something I was prepared for coming in, that, oh, turns out Ime Udoka is, like, the most outspoken coach in the NBA.
He's being,
like,
outspoken, yeah. Like, you can look back to the Olympic games where it's, what was it? It was the gold medal game, I believe. And like KD's like talking with Patty Mills. And it's like, there's going to be some problems for the Boston Celtics next year because they had just signed Patty Mills. And Ime is just like, we know how to lock Patty's butt up. And it's just like, okay.
I mean, that's really the thing with that, because like even from earlier in the season, and I'm sure there was something coming into it, you're like, oh, you know, two pop disciples and, you know, Bud and Udoka go up in the same way. They could not be any more different.
I will say, though, no, like Ime Udoka, wow, I just swallowed my own words there, is incredible. I think he's a fantastic coach.
For sure.
Yes, just got to get that out of the way so we're not just slamming.
Yeah, okay, so no one's coming at me about it. But they could not be more different in their approach to not just like, because you're not just speaking to the media, you're not just talking about referees, you're putting a message out there that is more directly tied to your players, to the opposing players, and you're trying to have a greater influence on the series. And there are certainly times for that, like that could be a really good thing. It's been something over the years, we've been disappointed that Bud doesn't do more of it. But if you're doing it all the time, every game, that's kind of different. So maybe you guys feel I'm wide of the mark on that, but I do think it's interesting when there's a tone that is set for that from him. And then obviously you've got other guys who they're not shy about talking about officials or chirping on the court. Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown has been doing some of it too.
Tatum has made some of the same mistakes Williams has in terms of losing a play for doing that or waiting too long to get up court. But if you're Ime Udoka, you can't exactly inexplicably bench Jason Tatum for half of a quarter. So I think
he's
just going to get away with it a bit more. He was also, you know, quite good in this game, although still not finding his comfort zone from three, which is really
Adam, do you have something to say?
Oh, he had a very hard-earned, well-deserved 34 points.
There we go.
That's all I've got on that.
To that note, Adam, though, about the foul thing, only the Jays shot free throws. The Bucks shot more free throws in Boston tonight. I certainly think it gets grading to the officials. Like, these are people.
Of course it does.
And of course, it's got to be so annoying every single time down the floor. Like, if you're not legit a LeBron kind of guy, I think officials get tired of him. They just know they can never throw him out of a game. But I just think it's got to just be like, all right, just shut up and play at a certain point.
Well, even the idea.
Mike Budenholzer was going to fight Mark Lindsay. Did you see that?
Bud was fired up.
Bud picks his spots, though. It's not all game.
Things looked up from there, too, to be fair. I mean, I don't have either of you ever refereed games at any level? Like, or
no.
I'd be curious for someone's perspective on this who has done this. You
Mark
know,
Davis
you always get the idea of, oh, you know, eventually you'll wear a ref down. And, you know, if you get on his case, you'll get the calls late in games. But I think you're right, Ty. Is human nature not eventually? You just be like, I'm so sick of this guy. This game's over in a minute anyway. You know, like, I think that could certainly work against you.
We had Brad Fisher on the pod to do a coaching perspective. Now we got to grab an official from the area and get into that. I like
After
the idea.
The series,
that's off-season content for sure.
Is Donaghy available?
I think we'd have some other questions for him.
Well, if you're just talking official who's not currently working,
it's, you know, fair point.
I hear he'll, no, I won't say that. We'll just keep going. That's probably get us in trouble.
I think the only guy who played who we haven't talked about, and after that, we should probably talk about someone who hasn't played in a little while. Brook Lopez, 20 points. I still don't think they're getting him quite enough shots. That he did shoot
20 points.
Well, that's 20 minutes. Sorry. 20 minutes.
I was like, what?
20 minutes. He had
Brooke keeps doing Brooke stuff.
Rookie cookie, the new phrase for when Brooke hits a shot. We only got to say it once. I said it twice.
When you say we,
it's you.
Me and someone in playback. Someone in playback. Might have been Kelp. Shout out to whoever said it in playback. But it's just not a great Brooke series, especially with Robert Williams not playing. I do think that's where he's going to find the most success. But the Celtics are going small. They're stretching the floor. It's just been tough for him. And it's just, this is a hard team to post up with all the defensive metal they have, I think. So, you know, you just keep playing him around this much. I think this is a good amount of minutes. But I don't expect him to suddenly be able to close unless the Celtics are going big on, like, Robert Williams playing a ton. even then, maybe not. But certainly, I think that's the only way I'd see Brook playing more than this.
I did think the Bucks were actually quite effective in his minutes tonight without him doing much. Because even if you look plus minus, he's minus three. He did not have the benefit of being on the court for the run that certainly helped everyone else's plus minus in the fourth quarter. Did he see the court in the fourth quarter at all? I don't think so. If he did, it was very, very early. I think he's doing a pretty solid job, as he tends to do. It's not like he's a weak spot for the Bucks. He basically never is. When you see Jason Tatum kind of get him on an island, is that comfortable? No. Some of those shots are going to go in, but you do also trust Brook to do all that he can, weaponize his size, make that as difficult as possible, and just hang out there, which in a different way is what we already touched on. Like, that's what we're looking for Bobby to do, to cover up his weaknesses. I think Brook is pretty good at doing the same. It goes to what we're saying about George Hill, though, in terms of if you're going to be playing Brook, how about when he's out there, you work ways to get him more involved in your offense and to capitalize on the opportunities that are there. Now, maybe next time out, if Robert Williams is back, those opportunities aren't there quite as much, but they have left some scraps, at least, on the table over the past couple of games in what they haven't got going with Brook.
He did not play in the fourth, by the way.
There's less offensive, but maybe more defensive opportunities for Brook if Robert Williams is playing. I think his one bucket was, again, a pick and roll. Right? Or am I wrong? No, it wasn't. I'm thinking of Bobby's early bucket. I don't remember what his bucket. No, it was like a jump hook thing. It's Brookie Cookie.
I don't even remember.
I thought it was a dunk. I thought it was another kind of. In my head, I had not quite the alley oop off the missed Drew shot like we got last time, but I did think there was some sort of Drew connection where it was kind of tossed up there.
I'm pulling it up now. How often is Brook Lopez in your head?
In my head?
Yeah.
Less than Andre Drummond for you, Ty, apparently.
No, I don't think that's true.
That's definitely not true.
I nailed it. 18-foot jumper from a Drew Holiday assist.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. It kind of fell in the front door.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
Brookie Cookie.
We got Lindell tweeting, Drew Holiday is the best defender in the league. I said what I said. Black emoji.
No lies detected. Like, yeah. That really must have, like, Marcus Smart, that must have really got under his skin.
He said, he just gave credit to the Bucks. He's saying the right things, but that play where he got blocked, they drew it up for Tatum. Smart, I think his quote was, like, just nobody, like, everyone was just standing still, so I just went for it, which is extremely Marcus Smart. But someone had to. I'm not saying it's not the right thing, but it's very Marcus Smart.
What else is there to cover from this game?
Well, Ty said someone who hasn't played for a while.
Oh,
is that
yeah.
Who
wait,
think?
Let me Serge Ibaka? Let me pull the exact quote. He said, quote,
Luca Vildoza?
Everyone was standing around. They were getting close on the 5-second count, and we had no timeouts. Drew made a great play. I agree.
That, sure that did. Has to bother him. That has to bother
no,
him.
No, I do. Like, I'm not even being funny about it. It must. Like, yeah. Really irk him for someone to come up with two defensive plays like that on him to steal the game. Like, it's not how it goes in his own mind. You know, it's not how he's been playing back this series over and over again.
The player who hadn't played is Chris Middleton. Don't want to get anyone's hopes up. Dario Melendez, who initially reported he would be out 3 to 4 weeks before anyone else reported a timeline, which is not exactly the same as the reports we've gotten from other media outlets. Was it Shams who went on McAfee to do take-a-thon or whatever? Stupid thing. He said there's a strong possibility, I think it was. Is that the quote? Something.
Shams was just sticking to his original report.
Oh, no, not Shams. But Dario's, okay, yeah. Dario's latest report. There's a strong possibility that Chris will be back for a game six. We'll see. I said this on playback. Dario was basically within the Bucks working for Fox Sports Wisconsin, later Bally Sports Wisconsin, and now is not. He's with WISN 12. So maybe could be sources there that couldn't really utilize before because he was
speculation, pure speculation.
Yeah, this is all speculation. I haven't talked to him. I haven't heard about this from anyone else. Just my read on it as a Bucks broadcast watcher. And,
it could be credible, is what you're saying. Yeah, like there is. I mean, my one thing on this is, regardless of Chris is ready or not, I thought he was going to be playing game 6 when we were talking about a few minutes to go in the game. Changing my mind because the situation has changed.
Because now you have the lead. I think he would have played regardless if the Bucks lost this game.
I think
now
if he's,
that they won,
I think I if he's ready, if he plays.
He's not going to be that ready.
See, like, this is the same. It's the same approach that the Bucks took the last time they played the Celtics with Malcolm Brogdon. They could have brought him back, but they were up in the series. They didn't feel like they had a need to. I feel like you're in a similar situation here.
But
I
are you talking about 2019 series?
Yeah.
Well, that series ended in 5 games, so I think they have a lead. They have a lead. I think if you're the Bucks, you do not want to go back to Boston and try to win. You have to win there 3 times in a 7-game series. I think there still should be a real sense of urgency for this game 6.
Well, let's say in their head, right, if they're – and I'm not assuming the books go true here. I'm just saying this is how the books have got to assume in terms of Middleton's timeline. If they're in a spot where they're like, well, what's the ideal date we'd pencil in for when he's coming back? If that's like game 2 of the conference finals, but he could play a game 6 or a game 7, you know, if it's that kind of – I think in saying, okay, do we believe we can win 1 or 2 games without him? Like, there's no doubt that's a risk, and there's 100% there's the you've got them where you want them, go for the jugular, you know, let's bring Chris out there and let's close this thing out and don't take any chances, don't play with your food, to bring back a term that has come up in terms of talking about the Milwaukee Bucks plenty of times before. I get that, but I could also see, and I would possibly lean, if it's like, if he's ready, he's ready. Like, if they were planning that, and what I would speculate, and it's pure speculation, I don't think Bud talks about this if there isn't a chance of him imminently having a different 100%. Status on injury reports.
100%.
But that also doesn't mean that the status change in an injury report means he's available for game 6.
But and there hasn't been a change yet, either.
There hasn't. Yeah. But that, to me, is the only reason Bud talks about it, because we know Bud does not like to talk about anything, and the books... Like, as a policy, did you not talk about injuries?
Their update,
they just talked about how funny. They just talked about how they're not going to answer any questions about starting lineups. And the Bucks were promoting that tweet on that clip on social media. Like, that's the type of thing we're talking about here. Did you guys not see that?
No, I did. Bud's, I forgot. The injury update on Chris last week or whatever. It was just like, we'll let you know when this news was. Everything's going well. We'll let you know when this news.
We know what the purpose of that was, and all the beat reporters, journalists were talking about it. They dropped that literally like 2 seconds before Bud's media availability. So it was essentially a prompt to be like, don't ask him about Chris, as if that was going to happen anyway. But that was the intent behind that, is, oh, we'll put the Chris injury update out now, so people will not be asking, oh, where's Chris at? When's Chris going to be back? They'll just be like, no. So that's the intent there, which also shows how they usually handle this stuff. So to be at a point where they're talking about him, it's because I think that injury report is going to read differently soon. That doesn't mean that, you know, he's going to go straight into a spot where it's like available and he's going to be playing. I just think we're going to see a change there sooner or later. If it's not game 6, if this goes 7, I would think Chris Middleton has a different status on the injury report.
I think Chris Middleton plays this series.
So what are you saying, Rohan? Are you saying he plays in game 6?
That's all I'm saying.
He's either a Bucks pessimist or a Chris optimist. And he won't tell us which. Very, very Trusky.
I was going to say, I'm pulling a Jordan here.
Filling in for our occupied brother in arms. I would love it if he plays game 6. What?
It's just a fun.
I just want to point out that Jordan is just, he's busy with work at the moment.
He's not
just,
at war.
We're all at war.
Yeah. No, we're not.
With who?
No,
ourselves?
Snotty dripping.
I'm not at war with anyone.
I'm not either.
I really
hope that Dario is right and Chris is ready to go. The initial timeline that I mentioned earlier, Dario did share, was 3 to 4 weeks. Game 5-6 would be 3 weeks and 1 day from that initial report. So we'll see. Hard to say right now, but it would be awesome if he plays game 6 because he is truly ready to play game 6 and then get probably only a couple days off before this potential start in the case of a Bucks victory the next series. I guess we'll see what happens with Miami.
It's Sunday. If the series wraps up in game 6, the conference finals start on Sunday.
For both teams, if they both wrap in 6 games.
I said what I said.
I know. Yeah, we'll see, but fingers crossed.
I mean, we're now facing closeout territory. The Milwaukee Bucks under Mike Budenholzer are 8-0 when they have closeout opportunities.
Crispy stat. I'd forgotten about that one.
So you're saying Chris is back for game 6. Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm saying I think Chris plays this series.
So is Bud going to lose his perfect record? Or
none of us have info.
I think Chris plays the series.
I want you to go out on a limb here, Ron. This is not like it.
I think Chris plays in the series.
You should have just been like me. I didn't even make a call. I just said I hope. And I got away with it.
See, but I'm upsetting Adam, so it's good.
No, it's not upsetting me. I just want you to commit to it.
I am committing to it. I'm saying he's playing in the series.
Okay.
He's just going to keep saying it. I've been down these roads before, Adam.
I'm not even pushing him this hard, and he just keeps saying it. So we'll move on.
I think that's all we've got.
Oh, we should do predictions then for game 6.
Bucks win.
Score predictions. Someone say score predictions?
Wrong.
No, you go first.
I think the Bucks are going to win. It's impossible. I don't know how they won tonight. I honestly do not know how they won that game with how that game was going.
They were down 14 in the fourth quarter with just under 10 minutes to go.
A situation
what did you
say? That had
141 and 1.
Okay. 100 and something and 0 outside of the bubble.
Ridiculous. What a ridiculous game.
This is what they do, though.
This is exactly what they do. I said this.
Unbelievable.
I think I said this on the Rami show. Shout out to all of our friends in radio who I think have had all of us on various shows at this point. But on the way back, I was coming back from I was on the road, as you all saw, for game 4 or game 3. And on the way back, I remember thinking it would be so Bucks if they split 4 and 5 and then Chris comes back and they won game 6. Because that's such classic storybook. Everything's terrible, but the Bucks end up winning. And this, I mean, last year it was a storybook playoff run. You look back on it, there's so many twists and turns, it doesn't even make sense. That would be the most possible Bucks. There's still those down bad moments that we all question our belief system. And then they end up doing the damn thing in crazy fashion. That would be it. So I got it wrong. I figured they would win 4 and lose 5. That's me being a silly goose and thinking the Bucks do anything according to plan. But it's still possible that that lines up. And, fingers crossed. All I'll say.
Oof.
Did you make a...
No, call? He didn't.
Roro?
Oh, God. I haven't heard that in years. I'm not making a prediction.
What?
Why? What's going on? I don't get this.
Full Tresky.
It's a bit I started and have to commit to.
When did you start this bit?
5 minutes ago.
I don't care about the bit.
No, I don't know about the bit.
I'm committed to this bit that I created. I'm not making a prediction.
Can we pull a Webster here and can we the dictionary definition? Can it be a bit if there's only one person in on it?
Yes.
I'm sure our listeners would like to hear you make a prediction. Your whole bit is that you're the predictions guy. Make a score prediction.
I don't know if I'm the prediction.
Are you going to give a score prediction, but not the teams?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm going to
do. So terrible. It's just numbers. It's just algebra.
197.
Wow. I can't believe Rowan is picking the Celtics to beat the Bucks. I can't believe he's not even denying it.
197.
that's a bit too close for my health.
None of this is good for our health, Adam. Did you see what I was going through during that playback?
When you put your nostrils up to the mic or the camera, that's how you know something's really, really going on.
We need to get that clip out. I don't know how Rohan feels about that, but that is an incredible.
I gotta look at the clip first. make sure you join us live on playback so you don't miss that.
Yeah, we will not do one for game six. We can't tempt fate too much.
No, we can't.
And it's a Friday night, and you know, folks are busy. We get that.
Yeah. Is there anything else we need? Here's a good way to wrap this game up, or this pot up. Let's go through the sequence of events that ended the game. So we got I'm on the wrong quarter. Give me a sec. Oh, no. Oh, it's all falling apart.
This was a great plan. You've turned into the Boston Celtics in the final 10 seconds here. This is like watching Marcus Smart in real time.
Rohan is the new Celtics. We're the new Bucks. It's a progression.
We got Jason Tatum missed fade.
Over Pat.
Jaylen Brown gets the offensive rebound. Marcus Smart turns it over. We get a Drew Holiday three. To tie the game at 105, we get a shooting foul against Bobby Portis. Tatum goes to the line, makes the first one, makes the second one. Celtics up two. Giannis goes down, draws a foul on Grant Williams, draws another foul on Grant Williams to put them in the bonus, and it's a shooting foul. Giannis makes the first one, misses the second one. Bobby Portis fights for the rebound, tips it up and in. Bucks take the lead 108-107. Marcus Smart misses a driving layup because Drew Holiday swats his shot from behind. Bucks ball. They inbound the ball. Derek White takes a foul on Pat Connaughton, makes both free throws. Marcus Smart gets the inbound pass. Drew Holiday takes the ball away. Time expires. Bucks win.
We should get Rohan Reed's like iconic books play-by-plays on the Patreon with Titus Boston Accents.
Oh, now I think we might be up to three subscribers on that bad boy now. Three Rohan fans. Actually, 10 Rohan fans who are that dedicated, and then 7 of them are scared away by the Boston accent thing. It was truly I just love – you're always going to be scared of a last-second shot, especially – I mean, how many times it feels like the Celtics going back to – is that last season, the Tatum –
Can I interrupt? Because both of you specifically were terrifying me at that moment because TNT decided to show the Celtics scoring against the Nets late in game, Tatum shot, and you were both in hysterics laughing at how bad the Nets defense was. Oh. And I was just in my head being like, no, don't do it now. And then when Marcus Smart got past Pat so easily, Rohan just went, oh no. But Pat recovered and it was all beautiful from there. But that's the most scared I've been so far in this playoff run, without doubt, was when both of you were just like doubled over laughing at the Nets trying to defend in a similar situation.
It was really funny. It was hilarious.
But I just wanna at the time I was like, can we just wait 30 seconds and then be like, look at what the Nets did. Can we talk about the Nets? So.
People respond to stress, anxiety, adversity in different ways. I am very much the person who is like just cracking jokes at funerals, man. I can't help it. It's just who I am. It's no
disrespect.
You guys
know how I react.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone knows how busted. I do.
I think the best way to sum it up, Rohan's still going to do the outro. Always trust the Bucks. I trust the Bucks. I'm on record.
Oh, God.
I'm on record. Yeah. I do.
Yeah. I agree with that, but it sounds scary when you say
it. I know it does.
Yeah, it does. It's very
scary.
I'm
leaning in. They keep giving me reasons. Every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in. So oh, maybe I can make some, you know, some plans for June. Nope.
Oh, my goodness. And on that note,
I have some plans in May, actually. So not really a true statement.
Be done?
Hey, take us home, Rohan. I don't know what tie is talking
about. Sorry about what I'm up to. I don't know.
Thank you for listening to this episode here on the Eurostep Podcast Network. Make sure you leave a 5-star rating on your podcast platform of choice. Ty, do we have any reviews?
It's been a while. The folks are not reviewing. They should. We got a bunch of new listeners.
I mean, yeah, let me check. I'm not prepared for this.
I'm glad I'm not the only one. I'm not the only reason the intro is messed up now. No new reviews.
Really? I feel like I saw one earlier.
I'm checking Chartable.
We do. On Apple. We do have a new review.
Oh.
Oh,
no. We have a couple of reviews.
Why is Chartable not showing me new reviews?
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
I'm not prepared for this.
I'm disrespecting the listeners.
So
I'll read this one out if you want, Rob.
No, it's okay. I can do
There's two reviews there, and I'm worried you might choose one and not the other for strategic reasons.
Oh, boy.
So I'm going to read one from Books Fan for Life. Is that the one you're looking at, Rohan?
No, I'm already excited for this.
Books Fan for Life says, great pod. Long overdue review, but had to take advantage of Rohan saying he'd sing. I remember he tweeted once that he's the Indian Justin Bieber and played Ghost. Can he just sing that? And here on the Eurostep Podcast Network, we do have a tradition of reviews setting up performances of songs. Andrew Snyder has done this over on Cruises for Bruising.
That was great.
So, I mean, if you want to sing, Rohan.
Rohan, you're lucky. I think I really fell apart. I'm sure a lot of people clicked off then, so I wouldn't worry too much about. Although it will be in the promo that you sing on the pod.
There'll be a separate tweet for it.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, yeah, it's, yeah.
Okay. Oh boy.
Oh, he's getting the water in. A true vocal performer.
Oh boy, why did I agree to this?
You didn't agree to this, you proposed this. Nobody was like, Rohan has to sing.
Okay, I'll just do the chorus. Why not? I did tweet this. Shout out to you for remembering this. I did tweet myself playing Ghost on piano. If I can speak close to you, I'll settle for the ghost of you. I miss you more than life. And if you can't be next to me, your memory is ecstasy. I miss you more than life. I miss you more than life. There you go.
It's literally the moment from Step Brothers where he tells him that you're the songbird of a generation. That was good.
That was good. My face is so red from trying not to like explode. I know, laughing.
It was really tough.
Because just what a way for us to end this podcast. it was so, Rohan was so gently serenading everyone. It's the lullaby I need at 4 a.m. Yeah, I'm gonna have a great sleep.
Oh boy. This got yeah.
That was good, Rohan. No, that was good. You crushed it on little notice.
I respect it. If someone asks me to sing, I'm not singing.
Not that
I don't sound like that.
And you really went for it too. You know, you didn't like half-ass, like that's how I do it.
Bobby bored his level of commitment.
Yeah.
Shout out to Bobby. Rohan Buckets. How about that? You know what's fun? We're all wearing Eurostep merch.
Oh yeah.
Shout out GSPNstore.com.
GSPNstore.com.
Because we're still somehow on the outro. Make sure you check out gspnstore.com. Lots of great stuff over there. It's not just Eurostep, Bitcoin 6, Cruising for a Bruising, GSPN. A lot of fun stuff out there. Check that out. Make sure you are subscribed to wherever you're listening, YouTube, your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you leave a like, subscribe. I already said that, but I'm going to say it again because I forgot I said it the first time. Make sure you check out the Substack, follow all of us on Twitter, PodRandom, and we will talk to you next time.